Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm your host with the most.
Nice.
You like that? People like to say that in the 90s. Remember, they would call Beetlejuice the ghost with the most.
That was such a good movie.
I hope they don't make a sequel to that. All right, so I'm
too late.
I'm here today with my good friend over there, Ms. Nadia Cater.
Miz is good. Okay,
Nadia,
so we never talked about this, and I am so sorry. I'm not binary.
Okay.
It's never come up in conversation, and then I realize that now, and I'm like, it's kind of like, oh right, we talk a lot, but never about gender.
Well,
And it's kind of weird.
Did you always think of yourself in that way?
No,
Or is it
just in the
something that
last
you've come to as you've grown to know yourself more?
second one.
Okay.
Honestly, my 30s are my best life right now. I feel like
Okay,
I
because
know myself better.
I was worried that I've misgendered you for like the last 10 years.
No, just for the last like year or two. That's fine. It's not offensive because, you know, identity is very like, it's not static. It changes. And we learn so much about ourselves over the course of a lifetime.
Do you still use the name Nadia?
Yeah, I do. I go by my original pronunciation, Nadia. So that is the Arabic pronunciation.
Nadia.
Yeah. It's cool though. It's like, okay, I'm coming into myself, and then now my
Yeah.
good friends I have to like re-come out to people. Like that's also a weird experience. But yeah, so Ms. Mix, cool. I use they, them pronouns, NBD. But you never offended me. So don't worry about that.
Well, I will now refer to you correctly.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
It's going to be hard to not call you Nadia because that's the way I've always pronounced it. But
I
can
know.
Was it? Say it again.
So it's Nadia. So Nad,
Nadia.
like, yeah. So Nads, like a middle schooler would say
Right,
balls.
Right.
And then Ya, like, yes, queen. Yes, queen. So, yeah. It's, I don't know. I kind of realized, like, after I moved, no one calls me by my real name anymore. And my mom actually told us this many times growing up, is like, I gave you guys names so that Americans, she meant white people, so they don't like mess up the pronunciation of your name. So I gave you, all three of you, names that Americans use and Arabs use.
Interesting.
And I was like, great, but now I'm in a state where there's like barely any Arab people, so no one calls me by my name anymore, and you know I miss it. So you know, it changed, but that's cool. And it's okay if you slip up, NBD. We've known each other for so long now. It's,
yeah, we
you
haven't
know,
known each other a really long time.
We've gone through a lot of phases together too in our lives. It's interesting.
Yes, well, that's what happens, right?
Was
Well,
it like
Nadia,
10 years? No, more than
it
that.
might be. No, it's longer. It's definitely longer than 10 years.
Yeah,
maybe 12 years.
Still 12,
Right?
13.
20,
Yeah, something.
yeah. Like, think we met in 2012, unless it was earlier than that. It could have been, actually. Could have been 2011.
I think it might have been 2011 because I was graduating college, and I talked to you about the grad program that you attended, and we were introduced by a
Yes.
professor. Yes. And the
That was
professor
the
was like,
first
hey,
time we talked. I was being used to shill to you. This professor was like, oh, this is Nadia at the time. At the time, she. I'm immediately put in a position where I'm talking about the past. The professor was like, this person is thinking about going to this program. And I was like, well, let me sell it to you. And I've apologized for that since.
Honestly, you know, as I like reflect on my life, I don't regret going to grad school.
That's
it's
good.
given me it's given me a lot. Like, you know, my career path has changed a lot, but it gave me a lot of soft skills I use.
Sure,
You
I
know, even
bet.
though I had to pay a lot for that, but like in student
Oh
loans,
man.
but
I just found out my student loans are gonna like triple due to the fucking, I was on the Biden plan, the save plan that was paying like really cheap amount every month. And the Republicans were like, Mike Bongiorno can't be allowed to eat. So
Why did
So
they
they all the Republicans got together personally because they were like, Mike Bongiorno is living way too high on the hog. We gotta knock this guy down a few pegs.
Well, at first it almost sounded like they were the Crypt Keeper, and now they
Yeah.
kind of just sound like a bunch of New York bullies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awful, and it's I feel like that's going to be one of the things we remember the most about the Biden presidency, unfortunately, is like how he promised student loan forgiveness and we didn't get it.
But you know, he fucking tried.
He did.
He
He
did not
absolutely did.
try. And for like the last year or so, I've been paying very little. I mean, like really little payments. Now I could I would never I would actually I think the payments that I was paying, I think I would actually never pay it off. Like literally, I think mathematically it would never be paid off. But I also the reason I'm doing it is because at the same time I'm in a non-for-profit field, and in 10 years working in a field like that, you can be forgiven, public service forgiveness. So I just want to pay as little as I can for the next, I guess, 5 years. I've been in this field 5, maybe 6 years. Next 5, 4 years, and then be forgiven.
Yes, absolutely. Fingers crossed.
Hopefully. But it's so hard where we are right now, imagining 4 years in the future, right?
Yeah, it doesn't, it
This is
feels
Mad
surreal.
Max.
Like a more mundane Mad Max. Yeah.
All right,
Oh,
Nadia,
man.
let's talk about what we're here to talk about today, which is also a horror film. We talked about a horror film last week, but the one we talked about last week is a really good movie.
And
And
this is
this one
not.
is, it's a fun movie, kinda. It is a fun movie, yeah, but it has a mean streak in it that I wish it didn't have.
Okay.
It would be funner, it would be more fun if it didn't have the mean streak in it.
So when you say mean streak, do you mean monster rape?
Yes. Well, I wanted to do a trigger warning, but you just threw it out there.
Well, you
Trigger
can ref
warning, this movie we're talking about has sexual assaults and also animal abuse. So if you don't like hearing about things like that, then this is not the episode for you. And this movie does not treat these issues with great respect either.
No. There's also a lot of women in bikinis in
Oh
it, and like
yeah.
I understand that it's supposed to be a beach town, but I think like in New Jersey
It's not.
or
It's supposed to be a fishing town. How are there grizzled old men in like snow caps and then like girls in bikinis on the beach? Like what is the weather? We have to say the name.
yeah.
We haven't said the name yet. Na Nadja. No, it's Nadja. Here's what I'm gonna do wrong. I'm gonna say Nadja like the character from What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, Nadia. It's all right.
Nadja.
That's yeah, it's cool. So the town is called Noyo? Like
What's the
what?
name of the film? We haven't said the
Oh,
name of the
sorry.
film.
Oh my goodness, you're right. We didn't even say that. So monster or humanoids from the deep.
Yes, 1980.
Which
Humanoids. It's called Humanoids from the Deep most places, yet in the film, the title card says monster, and then in little tiny, almost like almost like they're trying to like sneak it past you, it says Humanoids from the Deep. I wonder if there was like a legal reason for that. Like, it really looks like they don't want you to see parentheses humanoids from the deep, but that's what we call it.
I kind of feel like though that title makes more sense because monster or monsters is so generic.
Right. Any movie could be called that. In fact, there is a movie called that about a serial killer. It's
Eileen
not a horror
Wuornos,
movie.
yeah,
Yeah.
monster, right? I mean, I guess she is a monster. Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. So Humanoids from the Deep is, well, it's directed by Barbara Peterson and Jimmy T. Murakami. He's uncredited because he was the person who shot all the rape. We'll talk about it a little later.
I would
They
want to be uncredited too.
put that stuff in there. Story by Frank Arnold and Martin B. Cohen. Screenplay by William Martin, although he's credited as Frederick James. Okay. Produced by Martin B. Cohen, Hunt Lowry, and executive produced by Roger Corman. This is a New World picture, folks. That's the headline. This is a Roger Corman movie. And he passed away recently, which is actually why I watched this. Shudder, one of our favorite streaming services, They actually have a lot of Roger Corman stuff, and when he died, they put out a little Roger Corman collection. So I looked at some of his stuff. This is a good place to start. What do you think? What are your feelings on Roger Corman?
You know, I haven't watched many Roger Corman movies, and I just kind of know him by that reputation of like, I'm gonna produce the cheapest, schlockiest thing possible and just churn it out. But then on the Criterion Channel, I watched his clips from his Adventures in Movie Going, and all of his recommendations were so interesting.
Like his favorite movies are like good arty movies.
Good foreign art house, a lot of them war-based movies. And then while he's talking in these he has these conversations, his company actually like distributed them. And li they were like the few places at the time you could get foreign movies distributed in America. It's just like those kinds of. So then you're like, what? Who was Roger
And then he'll
Corman?
be like, anyway, when I was producing the film Sloppy Assholes from Outer Space, I said to myself, you know, Boonwell, how would he shoot this? Yeah, he is. I don't want to come for him. In the past, I've gone hard on him. I've come for him hard, and I don't want to do that. His career, it seems like there's two people inside of him. There's the artist and then the businessman. And because like when I watched this, I also watched, and I've talked about this before on the show, Bucket of Blood, which is his first movie. And that's like a very good movie. It's a horror comedy that's really good. And he also later on directed a bunch of Edgar Allan Poe adaptations. And he did The House of Usher with Vincent Price. And I think that's a really good movie. So like there's a really good filmmaker in there. But then there's also like Humanoids from the Deep, where after the film's made, he says, you know, this movie needs more nudity and violence. I think you should add more scenes, and I think the humanoids should actually rape female victims. And that's when the director was like, no, I do not want to be a part of that. And he was like, okay, I'll have someone else shoot it then, who's probably this Jimmy T. Murakami fellow. And he was like, I'll show you the footage though before we put it out, which of course he didn't. They shot all that shit and just put it into the movie. And the director was unhappy with it. So was the lead actress. The lead actress wanted her name off the movie. She was like, this is not the movie I wanted to make. And then Corman, in typical Corman fashion, was like, I'll take your name off the movie. You just have to pay for us to redo the credits. And she was like, no. And he was like, okay, then your name's not the movie.
That's awful. What it makes me wonder though is like what kind of movie did they think they were making?
I think they
Like
didn't think it was high art, but I think if you look at this movie and take away the gratuitous boobies and the very weird rape, because it's like a guy in a monster costume on top. I mean, it's we don't see thrusting, we don't see anything that bad, but it's unsettling. You see like guys in big rubber costumes on top of naked women. If you take that stuff out, it's just a horror movie, which, you know, I think it would be fine. I mean, it's very derivative of Jaws. It's made in 1980, so it's got a lot of that Jaws in it. In the middle, it turns a little bit into like Friday the 13th. It ends with a scene taken right out of Alien. You know, I mean, it wouldn't have been great, but I think you can easily watch. I mean, I was watching it again today before our recording, and I was like, you know, you could cut out all of this rape. And then I went and learned after that. That was the shit that they reshot.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like,
It
it's
doesn't,
not
you don't need
important to the
it.
plot. No.
Not needed really at all.
I mean, is rape needed in a movie?
No, and it's like it's weird.
It's very uncomfortable
This
and
movie's
strange.
yeah. This is like a small fishing town. A lot of Jaws, again, there's Jaws vibes. The main character is this sort of dad bod guy named Jim, who wears red flannel,
And a blue
and
vest.
yeah, and he's kind of a good guy, but he doesn't stop the bad guys doing what they do. He kind of enables the bad guys.
Which the bad guys was also kind of confusing because I mean obviously the most bad guys are the monsters or the humanoids, but then there's also like this jerk like this jerk, which there's always some jerk in a
Slattery.
small town, Slattery,
Yeah.
who wants the cannery to open so that there's
Right.
more jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think he actually works for the can. Like, I wasn't sure what his connection was other than he supported
I
it.
think he owns, well, first of all, when they put in the rape and gratuitous nudity, to save time, Corman cut out some scenes. So there's the story probably made more sense in its original form. I believe there's a whole thing going on with Native Americans too. Slattery owns, I think, land, and they're going to build the cannery. Well, I should say the whole town's economy runs on salmon. They do salmon fishing. Salmon is like their whole economy. So they're going to do a cannery there where they, literally just can salmon and, for mass, retail.
Production, right.
Yeah, and it's going to bring jobs, and this character Johnny Eagle, who's Native American, he is against it. It's never totally clear why, but then at one point he says like that the land was taken from his people and he wants it. He doesn't want it. So maybe I think Slattery owns land that was his tribe's land, and Slattery really wants to have the cannery because he'll make a ton of money off of it.
Right. But you
Slattery's
know,
play. Yeah, go on.
sorry. I was gonna say, like, an emphasis on the native guy. He's the only one, like, the only one in the movie.
Yes, that's true.
Which is really odd, but.
And the Slattery keeps calling him this slur that I've never heard before. He calls him a braid. Did you notice that he's like, oh, look at his braid?
Yeah, and I knew, and
Have you ever heard
obviously,
that?
I haven't, but I made the connection.
Right, I guess because like braids? I
Like
don't know. If
natives
this
have
is really
braids.
offensive, I'm sorry. I was like, braid? What the fuck is that? It took me a minute.
I mean, the guy also doesn't have a braid, so that's also
Right.
like he just has like late 70s, early 80s kind of feathery big hair,
Yeah.
like most of the people in this movie.
Yeah.
The great hair,
Johnny.
by the way.
He's got the greatest name ever, though. Johnny Eagle.
That sounds like a hero
I'm
name.
Johnny Eagle. Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. So Slattery is played by Vic Morrow, who we all know was murdered by John Landis on the set of Twilight Zone.
Well, I would say the helicopter was also complicit.
Right. And John Landis's negligence and ego led to Vic Morrow's death and the death of
Horrible
two
death.
ch children extras.
Yeah, horrible, horrible death.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. That's another weird layer to that too, which is
Yes.
like, when was the Twilight Zone movie? That was
84, 85? I don't remember.
80, 82. That's when they were
82.
filmed. Yeah, because I'm looking
So
up
just 2 years
when Morrow
after
died.
this.
Yeah, so wow, imagine like your the end of your career was the Twilight Zone movie where everyone knows that you died in a scene
Yeah,
and
yeah.
this. I Oh, brutal.
So this movie's weird. It's got a lot of weird moments. There's a moment early on where there's a little fat kid who's on his dad's fishing boat, and he's like reading comics, and the dad's like, "What are you doing?" And he tells the kid to put gas in the tank of the boat or whatever, and then he thinks it's a big fish, but it's a humanoid monster. And he's like, forget about that. So the kid just leaves the gasoline, he just drops it, and gasoline goes all over the boat. The kid gets dragged into the water and I guess eaten by a humanoid from the deep. It's never quite clear how humanoids kill you. It seems like just touching you hurts you.
Well, there's always blood, so I guess you kind of assume that they're kind of ripping you apart in some way.
But sometimes they strangle you, and then there's just blood.
Yeah. And then
It's
like
never clear.
one of the characters, you're kept as, I guess, a sex slave in a seaweed kind of
Oh,
thing.
yeah.
That
Peggy.
was Peggy. Oof.
Yeah.
I gotta say though, a movie that I don't know a lot of horror movies that, like, actually in the movie story kills children, so that
He eats
was
this
interesting.
little fat kid, and then the boat explodes. This movie has. It reminds me of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, where they had that running joke that whenever they dropped something, it would explode. Like everything in this movie explodes so huge. There's so many explosions in this. There's a scene where a car like careens off of a bridge and then like it explodes, but it's like Hiroshima. It's so huge. It's like I don't know anything about cars, but do cars really explode like that?
No. There's also like a couple of seasons in The Simpsons where if you like watch them back to back, you'll notice that there's like at least two seasons where things would just randomly explode for no reason. And, like it's like, oh, the writers got bored. But that's what it kind of reminded me of.
Yeah,
The
it's
Simpsons,
hilarious.
it's so bizarre, but at the very least, sort of. They have an excuse for the boat explodes is because the chubby kid knocks over the gas container where he's supposed to be putting it in to make the winch, like pulling up the supposedly huge salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense, but then like the rest of the movie, you're like, okay, why are things
Right,
exploding?
right. Yeah, it's in some ways this movie is taking a lot from a lot of places, but its essential story I think is taking a lot from Creature from the Black Lagoon. Even though there's multiple humanoids, although you only ever see three at a time because they only had three costumes, but there are multiple humanoids. But in that in Creature from Black Lagoon, the creature is attracted to a human female. It doesn't sexually assault her. It's just enamored by her. So maybe that's what Corbin was thinking about.
Well, I mean, that also happens in King Kong, in
That's true.
probably Mighty Joe Young. So I think that's kind of a normal thing. It's just that Roger Corman was like, okay, I'm going to take this idea. And then I'm gonna really rev it up 80s
I'm gonna
style.
have these monsters rape human women.
I still can't believe that was a choice, but like
Yeah, and when the character Peggy is attacked, the monster like rips her bikini top off and you see her boobs.
you
And I
see
have to
her boobs a
say,
lot.
this is a problem for me. Not boobs, but a scene like that is a problem for me because see, I think look, sex and violence are linked, whether you like it or not. One is death and one is life. They're both carnal, they're both transgressive. To see death and sex in a movie felt like a rebellious act for the viewer. But the thing is, I think a horror movie should, in my opinion, the sex and death need to both be there, but there needs to be a line between them. Like if I'm seeing a scene where a monster's raping a girl, like how am I at the same time also supposed to be looking at her boobs and going, oh, cool, boobs. You know what I mean? They can't be happening simultaneously. Does this make sense to you?
I mean, I feel like I've seen it before. It's kind of
Oh
like,
yeah, but every time to me the worst example of it is in the Friday the 13th remake. There's a scene where a girl is skinny dipping and she like tries to hide under a dock. She's in a lake and she tries to hide under a dock and Jason like puts a machete down through her head. So she's stabbed in the head and then to pull his machete out, he pulls her body out of the water and you see her boobs. So in one shot, it's the violence and the sex like right on top of each other. And it's like, no, it's not together. And I'm not trying to kink shame people that are into S&M. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about there's a certain visual pleasure in violence, okay, whether you like it or not. That's one of the reasons young people like these kinds of movies. And there's visual pleasure in seeing bodies. It's when they're together for me that I have a problem. And I'm not prudish at all. In fact, I think one of the problems with contemporary cinema is there's not enough nudity. Like, there's not. Did you see Challengers?
yes.
Did you like it? I liked it.
I loved it. I thought
I
it was
loved it.
great.
Yeah, I thought it was great. But if Challengers had been made in the 90s, it would have had at least three more sex scenes and some nudity. The only nudity you see is male nudity, which is fine. You're always happy to see more penises on film. It shouldn't only be
Sure.
women. But for a movie that could have been so sexy, I felt like Challengers was actually a little bit chaste.
I would say it is a movie that is very sexual, but it's very sexual in a way of like the mind games. So I think the nudity, if they added more nudity, it would actually be a distraction. I also
Okay.
never seen as much male nudity in a movie that wasn't, I guess, pornography.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. Like it was like, okay, there's male nudity, and then there's a locker room scene where every man is naked. Just It was like the director was like, this is the one time I'm gonna get this shot, so I'm gonna put as many penises as I
Okay, I
can.
understand what you're saying. But in general, contemporary films are very sexless. And I wonder if it, there are some people that talk about that millennials and Gen Z have less sex than earlier generations. So maybe that's a part of it. I don't know. Part of me wonders if it's because of the proliferation of, ready on demand porn. Like why get your kicks at a movie theater seeing some beautiful women topless when on my phone I can get anything. You know what I mean? Maybe that's it.
I mean, that could be a part of it. It could also be maybe we're finally getting to a point of where actresses can push back on, and I feel like generally we hear a lot of stories about that kind of coercion.
Yes, of course,
So maybe that's it could be like just changing audience. It could be changing ethics. We're kind of seeing a little of that. It is an interesting point. I don't know if there's exactly one right answer, but it is a good
Some people
point.
blame Marvel, but I don't, people blame Marvel for all of cinema's current woes. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with it. Because those movies are very sexless. Anyway, so Humanoids from the Deep. Oh, this movie also has a pretty brutal dog killing, which is another real thing you don't see. Like you saw a little fat kid dog, and then you see a dog, like a cute dog. It's like going through the they let it outside, and then it's like going through the woods. Like you get the main guy Jim and his wife and baby. They live in like a cabin, and they seem to have a lot of land. So they let the dog Baron out, and Baron's like going through, and you see a lot of fog, and it's actually pretty cool looking. But then like a humanoid like grabs it and like chokes it, and then like we see it later on like in a bloody pile, and then we see that every dog in town has been killed. Do you remember that plot point?
I was wondering exactly what was going on in the world of the movie, because that first scene, you could have kind of argued that the dog was infringing on the humanoid's territory. But the second scene with all the dead dogs, it almost seemed like deliberate threat.
And they weren't eaten. Like if they were eaten, you could easily go, okay, the humanoids eat dog, but
But you
they're
could
not.
also
So why would they
the
just kill all the dogs?
Well, I was wondering if the first dog was eaten because of the way it was just in a big pile of like you
Fur and
really
blood
couldn't
or
tell.
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, you really couldn't tell what you were looking at, but it obviously like the dog's head was severed from its body. So it kind of looked like that. And then the second it's like, okay, if they're intelligent, does that mean they're exterminating to take over the town? Like the movie
Well, that's
itself
another
isn't
thing we
totally
could talk
clear.
about, which is their level of intellect, because it varies wildly from scene to scene, is all over the place. Like, and there's one at the end, and let's jump all over because this movie's we don't need to fucking go through this with a fine tooth comb. It ends with like a big they call it Salmon Fest. It's like the town's big it's like the town's big event every year. There's even like a girl named Miss Salmon, Little Miss Salmon, whose name is Candy, and of course she ends up topless at the end.
Oh, God.
So while that's going, so at the end, so in that moment, at the end there, jumping all the way to the end, a bunch of humanoids start like breaking through the boardwalk and like running around and creating chaos. It's just like terrorizing people, and people are screaming. It's this whole huge thing. It's the big set piece at the end of this movie. While that's going on, it's cutting to Jim, the main character. His wife is at home, and there's a humanoid like stalking around their house. And that humanoid is acting like Michael Myers from Halloween. And this wouldn't be so obvious if there were different points in the film. But in one moment, you have like them running around like basically like wolves, and then cut to the humanoid at their house, and it's like cleverly stalking her, and it's like, well, what is the level of intellect here?
Well, there's also like a lot of their intellect is less known through exposition. from the scientist lady that's studying them.
Dr.
So we
Susan
don't,
Drake.
yeah, like we don't really see them super intelligent, but it seems like they plan things sometimes, and other times they're just mindless creatures. It's very
Right.
odd. Also, their heads look like giant brains.
Well, their heads look like a, their bodies look like Creature from the Black Lagoon, and their heads look like a combination of Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horror, but then the back has brains like mutants from This Island Earth. The I gotta say the head the body design is fine. I don't like the head design.
Well,
And
it's
also
stupid.
there's daytime scenes and they should really not be. They should only ever show it at night.
I think this movie would have been kind of scarier if they did like the original cat people kind of thing, where it's like you don't really see the monster, but you see
Right.
like shadows or something.
They do
Like
that for the
they.
first couple attacks, but then they're just like showing it.
Yeah, and they move very stupidly and
Yeah.
slowly. Is the Salmon Fest just a ripoff of Jaws?
Whole well, they don't have, it's the 4th of July, but they don't really show like a party in Jaws. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Jaws here.
I mean, like, not really a party, but it's more like a whole town out. Isn't that like part of the plot point? One of the plot points of Jaws, like the
Well, I
mayor
guess
refuses to
on
close
the
the
4th of
beach.
July, everyone's in at the beach.
Right, but he didn't want to close the beach because people are coming in, and that was revenue. Yeah, so I think that is like the similar thing. Except this one was like, I don't know, salmon bikini ladies. Which is also confusing because it's like a fishing town, so are you trying to make it a tourist attraction?
Right. The radio station is called KFSH, K-Fish.
Hilarious.
Right. We see a DJ coming to them live from Fish Fest or from Salmon Fest.
Yeah, and his co-host is a woman in a bikini wearing a sa is Miss Salmon
The salmon.
wearing a
At one point,
bikini is sash.
I don't know if they show how she gets topless, but at one point during the sort of bacchanal at the end when everyone's fighting, you see her topless and she's like throwing rocks and beating up a thing one of them. And the actress said, you know, at least I got to not be a victim. At least I got to, you know, fight with my boobs out.
And high heels. She was wearing high heels too, which is
God
so
bless her.
weird. That's true. Did you get the feeling like I was kind of waiting for the radio host to kind of basically throw her to the creatures to
Yes,
save
because he's all
himself?
creepy and hitting on her. He's like, oh, I might have my hands full. It's like, all right, well, okay, calm down.
Yes,
And
you're
then,
waiting.
like, they get it, the he comes, they attack. But again, like just them touching you, like the humanoid comes up to the DJ, like swipes at him, and like half of its chest is gone, and then it's like jumping on the girl.
Yeah, it's very odd. It's like, okay, so I guess at this point, and then there's a point in the movie where the again, I don't remember anyone's names because they really don't matter, but
Yeah.
the one scientist is just like, oh, well, now they probably see humans as a threat and they're taking us out. And I'm like, what told you that?
Right.
What? It's like you're telling us that because you read the script, but what in this movie?
The I guess the other protagonist is Dr. Susan Drake, our scientist, and she does not take her top off. And she was the actress that wanted her name off the movie, but wouldn't pay for them to redo the credits. And she plays a pretty good character, pretty strong character. The director of the film identifies as a feminist and was really upset by what Corman did to the movie. She's like kind of like sci-fi movie scientist. Like, I know what's going on. I could give you a lot of exposition. I'm kind of just like in safari clothes. Because she's a woman, everybody's like, nobody really hits on her, but everyone's like, ah, she's a sweet little scientist, isn't she?
Well,
This little honey's quite a scientist.
yeah, all the grizzled fishermen, the
Yeah.
women in bikinis don't seem to have much to say to her.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot of women talking to each other in this movie.
Yeah. But you know, it's of course it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. But you know,
No.
the she's the reason for all this, right? She works for the cannery, and I guess the cannery has their own genetics laboratory, you know? I don't know how they fund that. I thought mostly they just can fish, but so she was genetically altering salmon to make them bigger and beefier and more
And grow
plentiful.
faster. Yeah.
Right. But some of her genetically modified salmon got out into the water by mistake, and they don't grow into the humanoids. The humanoids are this other fish that's like an ancient fish that I don't even know the name of. I don't know if it's a real fish or not. And those
It
fish
is.
ate it is.
It's a yeah. So it's a I can't pronounce it, man. Coathlin, something like that. So
Does
basically,
it look like a humanoid?
God, I don't know. I gotta look up what this stupid fish looks like. But
I'm Googling what kind of fish are humanoids from the deep. See if I get anything.
yeah, coelacanth. So anyway, I remember because I used to like buy trivia books when I was little. I used to read them a lot. And this fish was thought to be extinct for like millions of years. And then like in the 1900s, a fisherman caught one, and then it turns out that they're still around and barely changed. So that part
Really?
was true, which makes me think Roger Corman opened up a newspaper and saw that story and then just kind of like decided that's what he wanted in the movie, or whoever wrote it.
Yeah, so those fish eat the modified salmon, and that makes them evolve super fast and become humanoid. And even though they're evolving on their own super fast, they want to mate with humans to make hybrids with us, I guess. I
Which
don't
again
know.
is like, how do these fish creatures know that that's going to happen? Or
Right.
like, or how does a scientist know that's their motivation?
But
Is
if they've been
my
evolving on their own, like, why would they even need that? It just feels like Corman was like, I really want sexual assault in this movie, and how do I write it into it?
yeah, that's basically it. I'm also confused as to why an old fish eating a newer species of fish, genetically modified or not, means that that's going to mutate the fish.
I don't know.
It's also like, does that mean that the fish are mutating and then breeding on their own? Or are all of them just mutant creatures that came from eating the salmon? Like, do they lay eggs? I
I don't
mean,
know. Right. I don't know. I feel like they, right. Did they just form were they fish that ate those salmon and then changed, or did they give birth to this mutated whatever? Oh, I don't know. You know what, man? I've already thought too much about this.
yeah, we thought more about this than anyone that worked on the movie did already.
Or gave a shit about.
Did you notice like when we're seeing more of the humanoids, they start kind of moving like dinosaurs in a way? Like they have
Yeah.
big tails and they're just kind of like moving their arms like this. They're really long arms for some
Yeah.
reason.
Depending on who was playing the humanoids, they were playing them any way that they wanted, really. We haven't talked about the most insane scene.
Okay.
Do you remember the ventriloquist scene?
That was the weirdest move. Like, why did that happen?
It's clearly a reshoot because there's
Right.
full frontal nudity in that scene. So at one point in the middle, we cut to characters we've never seen before, and they're in a tent on the beach. Which is that a thing? Do you put a tent on the beach? Isn't that for like more grass?
I guess. I think so, but it's also like, it looks cold when they shot it. So, like, why would you go to the beach in cold weather to camp? It doesn't make any sense. So keep going this bizarro scene.
We see the tent, and we hear a woman say, "Come on, let me see it. Let me see it. Oh, come on, show me more than just the head. I want to see the whole thing." Right, very suggestive. And then we cut to a fucking ventriloquist dummy and a guy holding it, working it, doing an amazing job making it speak. And he it's because he had the head like in its shoulders, so she brings the head out and he's like doing a shitty ventriloquist act, but this is getting her hot and ready. And like he even says like, he works all the time for me. Like, this is your move? You pull out the ventriloquist dummy and that's what gets you laid? So she takes off all of her clothes
Naturally, yeah.
naturally, and then a humanoid from the deep comes and attacks them again, swipes him, he's like half of his back is gone, and then she runs down the beach totally nude. She has pubic hair, But she's nude, and then she runs right into the arms of a different humanoid. But I don't know if you noticed this. While the humanoid is attacking the guy and trying to grab the girl, you see a few shots of the ventriloquist dummy moving its eyes like it's watching. Now, this is probably just a joke, but if read literally, this is a world wherein both there are mutated humanoids from the deep and magic living ventriloquist dummies. Because the guy's already dead. Who's controlling its eyes?
The humanoid,
No,
naturally.
it's just looking on its own.
It's such a weird setup for, like, you could have had any reason those people are on the beach having sex or about to, and like.
You don't need the ventriloquist. I mean, look, what Corman wanted was the nudity, right? He wanted the girl to take her clothes off. Why do you? What's with the ventriloquist dummy? Like, what?
I mean, I'm sure he was laughing about it when he put it in. Like, I think it's just a very specific joke for one person.
Maybe like he's like the dummy's like Slappy from Goosebumps. Like it's alive. It's a whole nother thing going on. It's a whole nother mystical story happening. I don't know what else happens in this stupid movie. At one point, I don't know if we've said, but like there's the major troubles between Slattery and Johnny Eagle, and Slattery's being racist to him. And at one point they fist fight and Slattery blows up Johnny's house. Again, it explodes like it's Hiroshima. It's ridiculous. But then at the end, when the whole craziness is going on, there's like a dock that's collapsed, and Slattery's like holding on for dear life, like he's gonna fall in and be eaten by a humanoid. And then Johnny Eagle saves him and shoots the humanoid and then like picks up Slattery, and they've been like at odds through the whole movie. And that's how racism ended.
Well, it's also interesting because the movie tries to redeem Slattery because at one point through the whole mess, a child runs up to him and is like, "Help, my sister fell in the dock." For some
Yes.
reason, of everyone around, he goes to the stranger. So Slattery runs back to save this little girl, I think a blonde little girl, the ones that need the most saving.
Yeah, sure.
And then the humanoid gets him. And yeah, it's very odd because it kind of it feels like it's trying to earn that moment. But like Slattery, for most of the movie, believes Johnny Eagle is behind all of this. He blames Johnny Eagle for the dogs dying.
Yes, right, because we did say Johnny Eagle's dog is the only one that doesn't die.
And then it dies later.
Yeah, because Slattery kills it.
Yeah, we don't see that, but that's kind of like what the
Right.
movie wants us to think.
Yeah.
Which is, and he also blames him for a lot, like he has people follow him. Like
He
he
explodes his
really.
house. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing, and it just kind of like it does feel unearned, like
And
the
Jim, our so-called hero, like kind of defends Johnny, but not enough. Like he really doesn't stop Slattery.
it takes quite a few punches before he steps in when they're
Right.
fist fighting
Right.
outside the weird dance.
Right.
So the banjo kind of like, which is like, where is this town? Like.
Yeah.
Because
The whole Salmon Fest is insane. Just the idea of it. What about you brought up something great. There's a great image of a merry-go-round.
oh my goodness. So, like, during the Salmon Fest, which is basically like a state fair kind of thing, but more, I guess, more regional, like, because at one point, the mayor or Slattery, someone important, boring guy was like, people are going to be coming from 200, 300 miles away or whatever. And it's like, okay, sure. And so it's a whole fair. And there's one point where there's people on the carousel and there's just a humanoid on the carousel person slowly like chasing them. And it's like, what on earth is, why are they still on the carousel?
It's ridiculous. That whole scene is ridiculous. There's a shot stolen right out of Jaws. There's a shot where there's a little girl sitting on the ground, scared and alone, while people run around in chaos around her and she looks bewildered. That shot is right out of Jaws.
It's like shameless pulling. Like that's nothing.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
not like there's a difference between homage and like I'm gonna do this almost shot for
Oh,
shot,
no.
but way cheaper, you know? And
Yeah,
that's like
and
it's not
yeah.
homage.
And Corman had already made Piranha, which is also a Jaws ripoff. And Piranha was directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins and The Burbs and stuff. And he offered this to Joe Dante, and Joe Dante didn't want to do it, wisely.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do it, so
I mean, you already did a Jaws ripoff. You know what I mean? You already did one. Even the opening credits, like, it begins with like the POV, like it's underwater imagery that looks like the beginning of Jaws. There's a lot of Jaws at the beginning, but then in the middle, when it's killing just random teenagers, it really feels like a slasher movie.
I couldn't tell if they were actually teenagers or not, 'cause they kind of
Well, no
look.
one's a teenager in a movie.
I mean, yeah, the actors, sure, but it's like the way the people also treated them were either like teenagers or people in their 20s or
Oh,
30s. It was
maybe,
very,
maybe.
it was confusing.
But
I.
famously, teenagers are swoon to ventriloquist dummies. No woman in her 20s would take off her clothes for a ventriloquist dummy.
And there's only like four teenagers in this movie.
Yes.
This
And one Native American representing all of them.
right. Yeah, because at one point Slattery's like, Johnny Eagle is getting all the the representatives from all the tribes to come take the
Right, because he
land
tells him, I'm
back.
going to sue you and get my land back, and that's going to fuck up the cannery deal.
Yeah, which is like, but where's the rest of the community? Why is he the only person here? I mean, I guess we know why,
It's
but
not really clear why Johnny Eagle doesn't want a cannery. I mean, it will bring jobs, and he doesn't know that they're genetically modifying fish and being weird. They're just a cannery. I mean, you're already a fishing town. What do you have to do? You have to like bring the fish. You have to transport the fish to a cannery somewhere else.
I guess, like, again, a lot of ideas in this movie are not really explored. And I think that was kind of an environmentalist message of just like, because obviously, I mean, we know this because we live in the world
Yeah.
that those kind of factories do, unprecedented damage to the ecosystem
Okay.
and they pollute a lot. So,
Okay.
but yeah, again, it's like really half-assed in
Yeah, there's
this movie.
not a, motivations aren't totally clear.
No, which brings me to the motivation of the again, I can't remember her name, man. The scientist. What's her name?
Susan Drake, Dr. Susan Drake.
Okay, Dr. Susan Drake's motivations throughout this movie are very confusing
I
because
think
of
she's feels guilty over her part in it, I guess.
sure, but I mean it kind of doesn't she doesn't really seem to her the Her dialogue doesn't speak to that so much as I wanted to tell people, but the cannery told me no.
Well, she's also in her own movie. Like, she's act her tone is totally off from the movie she's in. She's like really like playing it up like it's a melodrama.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's the direction was maybe
Could
not
you imagine
the
being
best.
her and you were like, this is a movie. I read a good script. I wanted to make it. And then you show up for the premiere and there's all this nudity you didn't see. And then all of a sudden there's that ventriloquist dummy scene. That you
I
didn't
feel
even know was coming.
I mean, I feel like most actors must feel that way because they film things out of order, so they don't really and what's written down is not always gonna look like what's gonna be in the script. You also don't know
Yeah.
what's gonna be edited. So I mean, I would be pissed, I'm sure. Like definitely. But yeah, so anyway, what I was saying about Dr. Susan Drake was I read the end so just to move things along. So like the character Peggy, who is assaulted by the sea creature, she kind of disappears for most of the movie,
Yes.
like the rest of the movie. And then at the end, she comes back and she's giving birth.
Yeah, this is
And
the very last scene.
right before that scene, some of the characters are like, "Hey, where's the sign? Where's Susan Drake?" And they're like, "Oh, she had to rush back to her lab or whatever."
Yeah.
And then it's like you. Peggy is in labor and you think it's Susan Drake, but the thing is she's wearing a mask and she doesn't have much of a personality and everyone has big off blonde 80s hair in this movie, so
Do you think it's her? I thought it was her.
I thought it was her, but again I had to make assumptions.
Right.
And then
But
it's
you
like,
do,
okay.
yeah.
Well, I was thinking like, okay, so she's helping Peggy
Being a
give
scientist
birth.
doesn't mean you're a doctor that can, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Well, being a geneticist doesn't mean you could do anything Susan Drake does. It's like kind of movie scientists from the 80s
Right,
where
that's true.
because you're a scientist, you can do almost anything. Like,
But when you saw her giving birth, right, she's in labor, did you know exactly where it was going?
I had a feeling it would go. I didn't think it would be a direct alien ripoff, which it was, but
Yeah.
I knew she was going to give birth to a monster. I'm like, as soon as I saw that they didn't touch her, I'm like, oh, but I mean, she didn't have
Also, she
blood or
we've
stuff.
seen her been raped by a monster, so and now she's giving birth, so it's like, uh-oh.
Which is
This is gonna
like,
be a monster
okay.
baby.
So
But right. But
the monster has sperm.
it doesn't come out of her. It performs its own C-section and does like the chest burster from Alien.
Yeah, but bursts out of her stomach.
That bursts out of her stomach. And it looks a little like Alien, but it's like a little humanoid.
Yeah. It was that
And
was
that's
dumb.
it. That's the movie.
It made me think though, like, so for most of the movie you're not sure of Drake's like motivations really. Like, it seems like she's part of the good guys, but then she rushed to her lab, and it's like, if you knew that this was happening, right? Or making the connection of where the characters are like, where's Dr. Drake? And then to the labor scene, it makes you think like then she was hiding something again. Because why would she let this come to term?
Right. I mean, she did have a boyfriend that
That wore jean shorts, jorts, yes.
yeah, who got killed and they were sexually active, so maybe she was like, I hope this is my boyfriend's baby
Which you
and not
have to
that
make that
humanoid from the deep.
which you have to make that assumption again.
Well, you think, well, I mean, if they what do you call it, like we're thinking about it so much more than they ever thought about it. But like, if
Yes.
they do like a sonogram, won't they see a humanoid? Like, oh, it's a, what is it? It's a humanoid from the deep, actually.
Well, it's also like, how long was she pregnant? Because we don't know how much time has passed. But again, if they went through that whole exposition of the salmon breed and mature faster, so you have to assume that the humanoid baby would go through a life cycle faster.
Right. But but if that's not the doctor at the end, and you might be right, it might not be. Then one of our major characters just it doesn't. We don't see her again. Just off screen, they're like with dialogue. They're like, "Yeah, she's fine. She's over there. Don't worry about her."
Yeah, it's very odd. I know there are sequels to this. I do not want to see
There's
them.
a remake in 1996.
Oh God, that must be
We
terrible.
just a couple of weeks ago did the movie Clueless. Christian from Clueless, I believe, is in it. I don't remember. I was very active in 1996. I don't remember this. Like you, I like because I loved horror. At that time, I probably would have been like, ah, let's watch Humanoids from the Deep. I can't imagine it's good in any by any stretch of the imagination.
Just reading the first paragraph on Wikipedia,
Yeah.
I would say no.
Any wild changes in the story?
The United States Army conducts experiments on death row inmates in an attempt to create the perfect amphibious soldier, and the resulting man-fish hybrids escape to the open ocean. Over the next few days, several people are killed by being pulled into the sea and drowned.
Okay, so it's the military, not capitalism.
Which is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Slavoj
And
Žižek would be like, the humanoids from the deep is ideology.
I can't imagine him sitting through this movie. At 80 minutes, it feels long.
But I know for a movie that's barely a movie, it feels long. You're like,
It
oh, let's get
drags a lot.
going.
It just
Well, because it spends too much time cutting away to characters we haven't met before and don't know
And they all
to
kind of
just
look the
have them
same.
die or show us their boobs.
They're just so generic. Like, they really, it's hard to keep track. Except, again, like, Dr. Drake is the one scientist, the one woman in the movie that, well, I guess except for Jim's wife, who isn't topless at some point, or
Right. And I can't remember her name. She's Jim's wife.
Very strange movie.
I wonder if they talk in the 1996 version.
That would be
Would this
hilarious.
movie be better if they spoke?
Oh, man. I have no idea.
I feel like, well, look, going back to what I said when we first started this episode, this movie's silly and stupid enough that it could be fun. I just And it is fun. I could see someone enjoying this for what it is. But if it didn't have the rape adds a mean streak to it that makes it le you less apt to enjoy it on a fun level.
Well, I think it also speaks to the times like that we're living in. It's kind of like that shock value doesn't really have the same effect. Like I'm not saying people really loved rape in the 80s, but it's like in that time it's really like transgressive. And now like I guess it still is, but like you said, in a mean-spirited way, not really more of like a thrills and chills kind of way. It just feels unnecessary. Would you recommend this movie?
I was just gonna say, Nadia, would you recommend this movie?
Absolutely
Well,
not.
is this gonna be in your repertoire? Will you watch this again every Halloween? Like, it's time for a
I don't
monster. You
think.
know it's from the deep.
I think if anything, I would see if the 90s movie is any more interesting or maybe watch Creature from the Black Lagoon, which I haven't
Yeah,
seen.
I was gonna say maybe the one way you can get something interesting out of this critically is to read it through that movie, because and then you and you could, although that's not, I don't like that movie that much either. That's my least favorite. Oh no, it's not. That's one of that's my second least favorite Universal horror movie. The most would be Mummy. The Mummy's a terrible movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
Because it's boring.
It's boring. It's yeah, and it's also like the exact same plot as Dracula. It's weird. Anyway, so that's two thumbs up from us. Humanoids from the D from 1980. God, we've said it all. You've said it
Yeah.
all. Any you have any other points to bring up?
I mean, I guess if I was really stoned, I would say
Oh
this is a
yeah.
dumb horror movie to watch where you don't totally have to think it. Obviously, like you've said throughout this episode, we thought way more about this than anyone
Right.
would or should.
Yeah, I think it could be a party movie. It could be a party movie. You know what I mean? Just like, what do you want to put on? Like, just put on Humanoids from the Deep, and then people are drinking and smoking, and they're like, what the fuck is this on the screen? You know what I mean?
You know, what was also a weird inconsistency was like how much it took to kill the humanoids. Because some of
Yes.
them, it would be like one or two shots. And then others, it would like Johnny Eagle was using a harpoon gun at one point,
Yes.
which is
Oh,
like,
yeah.
was like, how tough are these things?
There's a great scene where you see a bunch of like good old boys surrounding a humanoid, and they all have like bats, and they bludgeon it. It's pretty hilarious.
That was something else. I wow. Okay, so like looking at so Johnny Eagles, the actor who played him, Anthony Pina, I'm just looking at what else he's done. He was on The Young and the Restless for like 20 plus years.
Good for him.
And Porky's 2, The Next Day.
Oh
Is that
boy.
really what they call that movie?
Yeah. Yes, it is. That's the name of that film.
Yeah, so except for Vic Morrow, I think everyone else in this movie doesn't really have a career, do they?
Yeah. I don't know what Jim has done.
He was on the series The
Doug
Virginian,
McClure. What was he on?
something called The Virginian, which was a Western television show from the
Okay.
60s. Like, all right.
He's in the Maverick movie from 1994. He's on one episode of Heat of the Night. He's on one episode of Matlock. So he did a lot of TV.
Yeah. It
One episode of
also
Evening Shade.
it doesn't seem like people really did much. The director, Barbara Peters, seems to like she just after this mess, she was like, I'm going to television. Just like directed television episodes for most of her career.
Oh, good for her. There's a lot of money in TV. Or there was. So good for her. Good for her.
It kind of seems like though it's like this movie ruined films for her. Like, I don't.
Well, can you imagine the only movie you make is Humanoids from the Deep?
Well, I
Who
mean, what did Jimmy Murakami work on? Like,
knows? He won't even use his name.
yeah, actually, looking at it, it's a lot of television stuff that no one remembers. Like, that's
Yeah.
a lot of his credits don't even have Wikipedia pages, you can't even see them. Like, what
Well, he
was
worked on
this?
Heavy Metal, the movie, the animated movie.
Yeah.
What? No,
And
we haven't said the score to this movie is James Horner, who's a real person that does stuff.
oh, okay.
So there's some talent here working here.
I mean, I would say Vic Morrow was also a talent.
Yes, he's probably the biggest name in this movie, or at the time.
Yeah, and he's not even really a main character, sort
No,
of.
no.
I
But he does wear a watch on both his wrists, which I don't know what that means. Is that a sign for something?
like
Is that like opulence? Like, I'm super rich. I have watches on both wrists. It's a
I
weird
think
choice.
yes, I think that's it.
All right, let's end this episode. This has been PCMC. We are your one-stop shop for pop culture ephemera, movies, TV, comics, listisodes. We talk about old stuff. We talk about new stuff. We talk about trailers. We talk about entertainment news. I was joined today by Nadia Cater. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. These are always fun, Mike.
We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.